This is Fix It. I'm Deshaunt, and unfortunately, our co-host Kevin is out recovering from a milkshake bender. But the show must go on, and today we're fixing sagebrush conservation with Dr. Matt Schinderman. Matt is the director of the HERS Lab at Oregon State University's Cascades campus. HERS stands for Human and Ecosystem Resilience and Sustainability. Matt works daily to manage U.S. national parks and other protected areas. He's also a senior instructor and program lead for the Sustainability Double Degree at OSU Cascades. His research is at once a mile wide and a fathom deep. More specifically, he teaches courses on everything from endangered species ecology to rangeland ecosystem management, in addition to his scholarly work on American pikas and the creation of functional habitat patches for conservation target species. He has degrees from Colorado State and Utah State. We're so thrilled you could join us today, Dr. Schinderman. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So let's back it up for our listeners here. Sagebrush conservation, you know, for the uninitiated, what does that mean and why is it so important?
That's a great question. Sagebrush is an ecosystem type that is very common around the Western United States. It's probably one of the most dominant ecosystems we have in the Western U.S. And for a long period of time, that ecosystem has been used to support a variety of different human activities, including things like livestock grazing, water diversions, mining, and increasingly recreation and energy development. And those land uses, particularly past uses, have left a pretty dramatic footprint on that landscape, such that sagebrush steppe that existed 150, 200 years ago is hard to find now. It's been heavily modified and in many ways very degraded. But this ecosystem is home to over 350 different plant and animal species of concern. A lot of people would be very familiar with the sage grouse as a federally listed species that has been in decline. It actually has been petitioned to be listed, but is not yet under the Endangered Species Act. So they are an imperiled ecosystem. They continue to face rapid changes, some of human origin and natural origin, and they're in desperate need of protection.
And Matt, for listeners who are maybe less environmentally conscious in their day-to-day lives, what are the implications of letting sagebrush continue to be developed on, continue to be eradicated?
Well, some of the implications are that some of the very special landscapes we seek for recreation will be dramatically altered and potentially permanently. One of the biggest issues on the sagebrush ecosystems is invasive plants, and invasive plants that come in and replace native species. And what happens long-term is that the whole ecosystem shifts. So if you go to sagebrush ecosystems to recreate and see wildlife, potentially over time, the very species we associate with sagebrush ecosystems, organisms like sage grouse or pronghorn, may no longer be supported by those systems if we continue to see them degraded by invasive plant species.
Well, it seems like a no-brainer for us to invest resources and our time into trying to conserve this valuable ecosystem, just so that we can continue to share it with the next generations for recreational purposes and appreciate the biodiversity therein. But what are the barriers that are keeping this from being something that we really put that time and energy into?
That's a good question, too. So there are several real challenges to better conservation of sagebrush ecosystems. The first is just they're large. They cover a very large spatial area of the Western United States. And so treating, actively managing landscapes like that at that scale is very, very difficult. When you combine that with the fact that many sagebrush ecosystems overlap different land management units, where we've got public land agencies like the Bureau of Land Management, National Park Service, U.S. Forest Service, they all have very different management mandates. Some of which are conservation or preservation oriented, and in other cases, it's very multiple use oriented. So that size and the different management strategies makes a consistent approach very complicated. Another serious challenge is, as I mentioned, a lot of sagebrush steppe ecosystems are pretty sensitive to change because they don't get a lot of rainfall and the soils aren't very productive. So when stresses occur, the impacts can be very long lasting. So these landscapes are easily damaged and very challenging to restore. So that's been a pretty significant issue. Another piece there in terms of challenge is that very few of the sagebrush ecosystems are found in what we would consider our most restricted protected areas, like national parks. So the few national parks where sagebrush steppe or sagebrush ecosystems occur are now really, really important as a location for protection strategies that can conserve the landscape. And then the last challenge is a really important one for people to understand is that every ecosystem is different. So sagebrush ecosystems in one location are uniquely different from sagebrush systems in another location. So one size fits all approaches to management just don't work. So those are probably the primary challenges.
Well, that's a lot to handle and manage. You have challenges intrinsic to just the type of habitat and the vast spatial area it covers, and bureaucratic challenges with how it's managed and how it's not necessarily in protected areas for a bulk of this land. So, you know, it seems very hard, very thorny as an issue for anyone to go after. How are you and folks in the scientific community looking to tackle this issue? What are people doing already?
So there's been a lot of work recently by scientists working for the agencies directly, the U.S. Forest Service, BLM, and National Park Service, to try to bring the state of the science regarding sagebrush management and conservation to managers. Another challenge I forgot to mention is sort of long-standing gap between scientists in the scientific community and managers, where sometimes the science is not getting to the people who need to use it, and sometimes there's a language barrier where scientists are ineffective at translating really good important information into management language. So for our part, we are working with the National Park Service directly and scientists within PAS to really translate state of the science information about sagebrush management for specific national park units and translate that scientific information into language that is relevant and meaningful for national park managers so that they can incorporate that information directly into their management plans. So, for example, we have been compiling geospatial information, map information, that we can provide to land managers in national park units to help them understand where are your highly sensitive sagebrush steppe vegetation communities that have the highest priority in terms of protection from wildfires or immediate response after a wildfire burns, as well as mapping information to help them understand here are the areas of vegetation that have the highest potential for restoration projects so that they can strategically prioritize where they want to invest their limited resources. There's a lot of that work happening in other land unit areas. We're not the only ones doing that work. But for the National Park Service, this is kind of a new effort to directly connect scientists with national park managers to develop park-specific guidelines.
What I love about this approach is that it's highly leveraged. You obviously couldn't go out and try to enforce some sort of conservation strategy on your own, but by enabling these really vastly more resourced agencies like the NPS to take actionable advice and work toward a more conserved ecosystem, you're able to get much more bang for your buck. So it seems like giving really tailored resources to people who might be able to make change is a pretty valuable strategy here. And on that note, maybe you have some advice on what our listeners can do here. And we'd like to break this down into a few facets. Maybe to start, what can our listeners who have some time on their hands, and especially during this coronavirus pandemic, do to help further the word and maybe get involved with sagebrush conservation efforts?
Well, there are a number of different things. So, you know, conservation is traditionally a cash-strapped endeavor, where there are almost never enough resources to accomplish the conservation goals we have for a variety of different issues. So supporting groups that are actively engaged in conservation, particularly groups like the OSU Cascades, HERS Lab, Human and Ecosystem Resilience and Sustainability Lab, really helps to leverage limited funding and achieve larger conservation ends than we might be able to achieve in a more piecemeal approach. Another piece of that is just to educate yourself and become aware of the work that is being done and some of the issues. So there's a great deal of information available online about sagebrush conservation and challenges and sagebrush steppe ecosystems that is pretty digestible and designed for folks in the general public to dive in and begin to understand what's going on. Another possibility there is the National Park Service has an unbelievable research arm that is dedicated to studying ecosystem changes and management practices in the national park system. And it's called the Inventory and Monitoring Network. Become familiar with that network. And there are opportunities to both financially support projects, but also to volunteer. So I encourage folks who have time and would like to get out in the field and support these projects, reach out to your local Forest Service, National Park Service, or Bureau of Land Management offices. Let them know that you'd like to help with invasive weed pulls or restoration projects or native plant projects for folks who are really into native plants or landscaping. There are lots of opportunities to do that or become a trail steward where you frequently hike a trail in a protected area unit. Help with mapping of invasive species outbreaks. Lots of different ways people can get involved while doing the things they like to do in the outdoors.
And what about for our fixers who might be fortunate enough to have some spare cash on their hands right now? Obviously, you touched on supporting organizations like the HERS Lab. Are there others that the generously minded should think about including on their Christmas gift list this year?
For sure. There are organizations in different areas that are working specifically on things like sage-grouse habitat restoration. And there isn't one entity at this point I can point you to, mostly because this is such a region by region challenge. But reaching out to some of the local Audubon societies as a starting point to identify groups who are working directly on sage grouse habitat restoration projects. This is a great way to help support on the ground conservation financially and have long, far-reaching effects. The Nature Conservancy would actually be an entity I can point folks to, as they have a pretty active sage-grouse management initiative.
Fantastic. And finally, if our listeners are fortunate enough to have made a witty Twitter joke at some point that netted them several thousand followers, what can they be retweeting? What can they be talking about to get the word out about why sagebrush conservation is an urgent and important issue for us?
I think social media posts that focus on sage grouse or things like the fact that mule deer, a species that was common throughout the Western United States, are declining in many areas, focusing on helping sage grouse. What can we do to think about sage grouse or mule deer habitat, and how can we all be a part of solutions moving forward? Those kinds of things are important for us to think about.
Well, listeners, you heard it here, Dr. Matt Schinderman explaining to us exactly how we can go about conserving the sagebrush ecosystem so that our children and our children's children can have the same recreational spaces that we've been fortunate enough to experience in our lifetimes. Thank you so much for joining us today, Matt.
Thank you. I really appreciate being on.
And thank you, fixers, for joining us today. Are you or people in your community solving tough problems with innovative solutions? Be sure to tweet at us at fix_cast using hashtag fixer to let us know. See you next time.